Well, look, I'll say a few things. One, I have been told on many occasions that I have the face for radio. So we record only the audio for the purpose of the podcast.
Okay.
That's one. Two, I think you look great. You look like you look like a woman who is out there literally feeding the masses and being fly on top. You know what I mean? Look, I mean, it's not an easy job, and you're pulling it off with grace. So.
Okay, thank you for lying to me. Thank you. I appreciate you.
Ladies and gentlemen, you are at the beginning of a quarantined edition of the Corner Store Podcast, and I'm talking via Zoom to Liz from 40 Acres Fresh Market. Liz is in her car because she has just made a drop of goods, and a little bit like a drug dealer, but a much fresher and better kind of produce that you are sharing with people. Liz, thank you so much.
Do you want to know why this is so funny?
Yes.
Is because I actually have a customer, I will not call her out by name,
okay,
who texts me and is like, do you have any more of those mangoes? Can I get a case of the mangoes? And I swear in like less than a week, she's ordered two full cases of mangoes and gone through both of, like, is going through both of them. And so I do kind of feel like I'm her pusher.
Yes.
And I've gotten her hooked on like these little yellow baby mangoes. And so I have another friend who calls me a kale slinger. He's like, you just be slinging kale through the neighbor.
You're out here. Exactly. No, you're like, so, yeah.
Yeah, I'm a dealer.
No, you are the freeway Ricky Ross of organic produce, or not? But no, okay, all right, Liz. What is your role at, and what is 40 Acres Fresh Market?
So my role is I'm the owner and operator, founder. 40 Acres Fresh Market is my baby. So it officially, like, technically I started it in November 2017 when I got my tax ID number so I could pay the state of Illinois, you know, it's sales tax because it requires that pound of flesh. But we launched and did our first market January 20th of 2018. 40 Acres Fresh Market it's a grocery startup. I want to say this 100%, we are not a nonprofit. We're not a food pantry. We are a grocery business with the focus on increasing access to fresh food in underserved communities. Our target community is the Austin community. We want a grocery store. Austin needs a grocery store. A lot of people have kind of tried to steer me away from brick and mortar retail. They're like, oh, you can just do delivery or just stay with the pop-ups. And I can't stress enough that when you're talking about communities that are underserved when it comes to fresh food access, it's about the built environment. Simply, like, and this is no shade to any organizations that are doing this work, like, meeting people's immediate need where they are is super important. So whether that be like a produce truck or a produce bus that people can come and it comes into the neighborhood, it meets that need in the moment, but it doesn't make that neighborhood not a food desert anymore. Like, so ultimately what these communities need is like consistent, healthy food infrastructure. And that's in this, where we are, that's grocery stores. You can supplement with community gardens and, you know, urban farms and seasonal farmers markets, but day in, day out, where do people get their food? Is they're going to the store. And if your neighborhood doesn't have those stores, one of two things are happening. Either you're foregoing those foods and getting what's available in your neighborhood, which happens, but not to the extent that people make it seem, or what's happening more than people like to acknowledge is that you're going outside of your neighborhood and spending money elsewhere. So if you live in, let's say, before South Shore got its grocery store, if you lived in South Shore, you were probably going to Hyde Park. If you live in Austin, you're more than likely going to Oak Park to get your groceries. If you live in North Lawndale, you're probably going to Cicero because it's like the next town over. So basically, you have these predominantly Black working class neighborhoods spending a crap ton of money because groceries are like, it's a staple. You're buying it all the time in other areas. So other areas get the commerce, you get the tax base, you get the jobs. And what do our neighborhoods get? Oh, you need more food pantries. Well, fuck that. No.
Right.
And then we get told that our neighborhoods can't support a grocery store while we are literally supporting grocery stores in the next neighborhood over.
Right. Right. And you know, let's be clear that the brick and mortar grocery store was, you know, one of the found, you know, along with other businesses, was a foundational element of building a strong, viable Black middle class in Chicago and in other cities, you know, across the country. And so
it's foundational to a neighborhood economy. When I bought my condo, one of the first things I looked at any neighborhood I was looking at was, how close is a grocery store to this location? Can I walk to the grocery store?
Right.
Is there some place that I can go to get my meat, to get my food, that doesn't require me to drive a long distance, that doesn't require me to take like two buses? Is there something within walking distance? Because when I first moved to Chicago, I'm not from here. When I first moved, I lived in the South Loop, and I lived at State and 11th. And that's like an embarrassment of riches. You got a Trader Joe's. I love that Trader Joe's in the South Loop. At Wabash and Roosevelt, right, Kitty Corner is a jewel. At State/Wabash and Roosevelt, right up the road is the Target. And even further up Roosevelt is a Whole Foods. Like that was my introduction to like, this is what it's like to get groceries in Chicago. You should be able to walk to your neighborhood store right here,
right,
or have four neighborhood stores within walking distance. So when I'm going into Black neighborhoods and I'm like, wow, depending on where you live in this neighborhood, you don't even have one store that you can walk to, not even one. I can't find an apple. I can't find a pack of strawberries on a hot summer day. I'm going to call it what it is. I'm going to call bullshit.
Yes. Well, so where do you come from?
I'm from New York. I'm from upstate New York, born and raised. Came out here in 2012 to go to grad school.
Okay. And what were you studying?
I got my MBA.
Okay. And did you know going into your MBA that
No.
you... Okay.
No.
All right.
Absolutely not. This was not part of the plan. This was not... I moved to Chicago to get away from groceries. I worked for General Mills for 10 years in sales, and so grocery stores were my customers.
Yeah.
And I had no interest in being in the grocery industry a day longer.
What were you doing for General Mills?
Sales.
Yeah, okay.
My pop-up market, even though she lives in Jersey. And so it turned out that one of her sorority sisters works for Essence and interviewed Oprah. And during the interview with Oprah name-dropped 40 Acres Fresh Market. So she was having like a total geek-out girl moment, like, oh my gosh, my sorority's interviewing Oprah, and Oprah just like name-dropped my friend's business. Holy crap. And so I saw that this morning on Facebook and basically fell out completely. I was like, oh my gosh, Oprah Winfrey said 40 Acres Fresh Market during an interview.
Well, and how does that happen?
I'm still trying to figure that out. No. So it all started with Pastor Marshall Hatch. He called me probably a month ago and said they were putting together this coalition that was dealing with food insecurity during COVID in Chicago. And he's like, if we're talking West Side, if we're talking food, that's a conversation you're obviously going to be in. And I was like, cool. So I was like, okay, what do you need? And, you know, he started talking about reviving the pop-up markets. And this was like back in early April. And I was like, nah, B, we are not reviving pop-up markets. No, it was probably mid to late April. And I was like, that's not happening. We're not doing pop-up markets in a week or so. Everything is shut down. The governor just extended the stay-at-home order. I'm not putting my staff at risk. I'm not putting people at risk. He's like, but you're an essential business. I'm like, yes, we are, but we don't have the... Sorry, I'm trying to find this bottle of Gatorade that's in my car because I'm super thirsty.
No, please stay hydrated. Yeah, I don't want you to pass out from lack of liquids. I like this tour of your car, though. This is nice.
I live in it because I'm in it all the time. Sure. And my boyfriend left a Gatorade that he didn't finish drinking, so...
Shout out to him. Yeah.
Oh, my God. Yes, shout out to him right now.
Yeah.
He's the real MVP. He's not getting this back.
Fair enough. Look, finders, keepers. I think that's the rule.
Thank you. You left it in my car. So basically you wanted me to have it.
It was a gift. I mean, I think he was had forethought.
He had forethought that I was going to be thirsty.
That's right. How much he loved me. He was looking out for you. Yeah, exactly.
Thank you. He was. So basically Pastor Hatch said, okay, if you can't do pop-up markets, get on this call. And it was a midday call. And at the time, my days, basically once I left the house by like 9 a.m., I was pretty much out of pocket. I was packing, I was buying food, helping pack delivery orders, and then immediately turning around, routing 2 to 3 drivers and doing my own delivery route too. There was just no time. I'm like, there's no way I can get on this call. That's prime buying time for me. I can't get on this call in the middle of the day. He's like, you're going to want to be on this call. Like, do your best to make this Zoom call. I'm just like, whatever. In my mind, y'all don't really understand my life. You don't understand what I have going on. Like, if you want to talk at 7 a.m., I can do that. Talk at 6 a.m., 7 a.m. Once I leave the house, like.
I'm in these streets.
Yeah, I don't have time for you.
Right.
So he puts me on. So he gives me the invitation. Is texting me that day, like, try to be on that call, but if you can't be on the call, is there anything you want me to say on your behalf? I'm like, I'm going to do my best. I get on the call like 10, 15 minutes late, and everybody's doing their spiel, their introductions. It's my turn. I talk about 40 acres. And then I realize they keep talking about Oprah Winfrey, and I'm like, what does Oprah have to do with any of this? Like, this makes no sense. And then I realize that this woman who's leading the call, who I don't recognize, works for the Oprah Winfrey Foundation. I'm like, oh, okay, that's cute. That's cool. And I said, we had like several of these calls before I actually realized that we were trying to get funding from the Oprah Winfrey Foundation. And it wasn't until about 2 days before the pitch to Oprah about what Live Healthy Chicago was going to do that I realized, oh crap, we're pitching Oprah herself.
Okay.
So that shows how much I was really paying attention. But it was just because, you know, at the time we had just brought on 3 new staff members. We were getting upwards of like 25 to 30 new delivery orders a day, which is doesn't sound like a ton, but when before you might get 7 in a week.
Wow. Right.
30 a day is a lot. We have no systems in place, meaning that even though we have a delivery website, you can order online. It's actually a Google form. There's no automation in our online thing. That's why we never really like tried to get a lot of like TV or press about our delivery service, because we were like, well, until we get a new website, we can't actually handle all these orders. Well, COVID came and people were like, janky website be damned. We just need to get fresh produce. We'll work with you. So yeah, we have our general manager who is a brilliant, you know, 1 year out of college grad, great with social media, great with marketing, just like a bevy of like energy and ideas, basically transcribing orders all day.
Wow.
To get them off of the Google form into an order form that our packers can then read and pack these orders. And so we have new packers on. Once again, we don't have proper grocery POS and like inventory management systems. We use Square and we make Square work, but it's not really built for grocery, not especially not produce. And so like they're learning how to figure out like, okay, which one of these 12 prices for oranges is the actual price for oranges I'm supposed to use today. They're using the wrong prices. We have to correct orders left and right. You know, just training new people, it takes time to get them on board, to understand your company's systems and everything. So we have all this going on. And then this group wants to meet about food insecurity. And I'm just like, yeah, we care about that. But like, ultimately, we're a grocery business. We just want to sell more groceries and build a sustainable food, a sustainable, healthy food business on the West Side, you know, in Austin. Right. That's all I really care about. And so, like, at the time, I was like, I don't really, like, I'll do whatever you need me to do, but I don't have time for this. That was kind of my attitude, because I didn't realize how big it was and what was happening around me.
Yeah.
Because I was just so deep into the business. And they'd schedule calls, and they'd be like, hey, can everybody talk at 7 tonight? I'm like, no, I can't talk at 7. I am on I-90 heading out south to go do these deliveries in South Shore or Inglewood or Beverly or Morgan Park or Chatham or South Chicago, or that's where I'm at tonight. And then I have to shoot all the way up to the North Side to deliver darn near in Evanston. And yeah. I don't know how you people up here heard about us. Like, who are, like, where are all these people coming from? Like, yeah, so I wasn't really in the headspace to, like, really understand that I was being pulled into this, like, pretty major coalition of some heavy hitters in Chicago, as well as the biggest heavy hitter of them all, Oprah Winfrey.
Right. And so
I wish I could tell you I was more strategic about it, but I think I could just say, like, I did the work ahead of time. Like, I'd been doing the work for so long that, like, when the conversation came and she was looking for organizations and she was looking to put this together, 40 Acres kind of just, like, rose to the top of that discussion, because we made ourselves, like, the food game in town when you're talking Austin or West Side and healthy food enterprises.
Yeah. No, that's right. So that must be, obviously, that is a big deal when Oprah shouts you out. I mean, if Oprah shouts out anything, it becomes a big deal.
My mom is super excited.
Yeah, of course.
And I told my mom about the call with Oprah, and, like, she went and just told the whole family. Then she posted on Facebook before Oprah even made her announcement. I was like, Mom, you have to take that down immediately. You don't steal Oprah Winfrey's thunder. Mom, like, I know you're excited, but this is not your flex. This is my flex, Mom. This is not your flex with your friend.
Yeah.
And you can calm down and wait until I give you something to share.
Yeah.
Take that down. But, yeah,
it's your mom's flex, really, though, too, isn't it? I mean, like, she, yeah, by association, it kind of is.
Yeah, she raised me.
Yeah, exactly. She's like, that's my baby. So what was the call with Oprah like? Can you speak on it?
Surreal.
Yeah. Is it just you and her? Did she, like, pull up on you? She's like, Liz.
No, so actually it was a coalition of us. So I got to shout out, you know, Westside United. Aisha Jaco is the executive director, and she's a beast.
Yeah.
She basically ran that ship. She ran that call. Jamal Cole of My Block, My Hood, My City had a huge part in just putting the deck together and the work he's doing, you know, especially on the South Side and throughout the city. Marshall Hatch Jr., who runs the Moffa Redemption Project. They all had much bigger roles and parts in this than I did. I had a slide on the call. So basically I just kind of sat there, listened to everybody else present, and was like, oh my God, that's Oprah. Oh my God, that's Oprah. Until it came time to discuss 40 Acres, and nobody can talk 40 Acres like I can talk 40 Acres. So I actually did a little bit of an intro to who we are and what we do. And then I kind of took it from there and was like, you have to understand, like, why we're different. And we're the only small business in this coalition. And, like, I just think that it goes to show that when you're talking social impact, when you're talking, like, who can, like, radically change change neighborhoods, nonprofits aren't the only game in town. They're not the only ones who can have really significant long-term social impact. And I've been saying that for a while, and I'm hoping that, you know, the fact that Oprah was cool with us being part of this coalition, not being, you know, a 501c3, but being a small business that's, you know, trying to scale and trying to grow, but with a mission, that it makes other philanthropists, investors kind of take a look at social enterprises as more than just like charities, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, we need businesses in neighborhoods if neighborhoods are going to be viable and self-sustaining and have, you know, basic resources that other neighborhoods have.
I've been saying this, and, you know, I was talking with Malcolm Crawford of AAABNA, Austin African American Business Networking Association, and we were discussing, like, you know, when you take small businesses out of a neighborhood, when you see whole commercial corridors, areas that are zoned for commercial use that have very few businesses, that erodes a neighborhood's tax base. Like, you can't do anything when every single building is occupied by an entity that's not a tax paying entity.
Right. Yeah.
Like, well, we need that tax base. Well, so, and I'm not, there's not room for, like, nonprofits, and this is the Booth girl in me. This is the U Chicago. Like, government has its sphere and the stuff that it can do really well that, like, other sectors absolutely can't. Business has the stuff it does really well that other sectors just can't do. And nonprofit kind of fills in those gaps where business and government can't fill. But nonprofit doesn't replace the role of business and commerce, especially when it comes to economic development in a neighborhood. And it just seems that, like, for decades, the prevailing strategy was, if we're going to put any investment in neighborhoods that need it, it's going all to the nonprofits. And I'm like, well, what about the small businesses? And the thing that's so interesting when you talk about the West Side and you talk about, like, the need for economic development is, like, there's a shit ton of micro businesses that are in these. The girl that does, you know, hair in her house, the dudes that fix cars, like, they can really fix cars, you know, in these back alleys and lots. Like, they're running micro businesses that they will never get funded to actually scale so that they can have create a neighborhood tax base. They can create more jobs. They can do more. Like, you keep them because, like, nobody thinks about funding them. Nobody thinks about bringing these micro enterprises to even small business scale. We're not talking about Facebook scale. We're just talking about getting the dude who's working out of his garage into a shop.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, and there's the neighborhoods have, you know, it teams with entrepreneurs. I mean, you know, the days of the candy lady. I mean, there are, you know, examples and examples of people being ingenuitous in order to make a dollar, you know?
Exactly. And it's like, I feel like we don't respect that.
Yeah.
We don't respect it, and we don't, like, we don't nurture that into something more. It's like we act like it's not there. And I'm like, nah, people are, like, really skilled. The dudes, these men and women can fix anything, make anything.
Right.
And it's like they will never get the capital they need to go beyond
right
doing normally.
Right, yeah.
And I'm just like, if you really want to invest in these communities, why aren't you investing? Why aren't you finding these people and investing in these people and in these micro enterprises that could be so much more, that could give a whole entire neighborhood an economic basis for jobs, goods and services? Like, it makes no sense.
Well,
and
yeah.
I think that the reason that 40 Acres has gotten what it's gotten is because I'm respectable. Like, I talk a certain way. I come from a certain place. I've been through the halls of certain institutions. So people feel comfortable backing what I'm doing more than they'd feel comfortable backing what, you know.
Yeah. Folks in the alley are doing.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. No, there's a respectability. I mean, there's a obviously like a classism, a racism. And, you know, I think these are the reasons why, you know, this investment does not happen time and again. And also why it's easier to invest or put money toward nonprofits, because oftentimes they come from outside of a neighborhood. And it is, you know, people consider that, businesses consider it charitable work. It isn't about sustaining and maintaining a community. It's about fixing. And there is, you know, an endless renewable resource of white saviorism that, you know, rears its ugly head in the city and beyond. So,
I said none of those words.
My words. Well, all right. So look, you know, you mentioned, what is the plan for 40 Acres? What is it now? And where is it moving?
Right now we are still a mobile market, that does pop-up markets, produce stands, and delivery service. Right now we can only do delivery service. And it just turned out that delivery service exploded for us during the age of COVID, becoming bigger than any other parts of our business. But I have not let that deter me or make me lose focus on the fact that we want a store.
Yeah.
It's about the built environment. It's about the jobs. It's about creating neighborhood infrastructure and an institution. It's about creating that anchor. And we can't 40 Acres can't do what its mission is without that. It's not simply about just bringing food to people. We've always said it's bigger than food. The second, I always knew I wanted a grocery store. Like, my path to the grocery store was, okay, I'll just do these pop-up markets and like, they'll grow over time, and then eventually we'll get a store. It's kind of like how Pete started. Pete started as a produce stand that they eventually built walls around. And then those walls got bigger and bigger and bigger. And now Pete's is like a behemoth, a privately owned just juggernaut that's run really, really well and is really fucking smart because they own everything. They own their land. They own their buildings. Like, that I'd love to see their asset portfolio and what that's worth, but they do what they do really well. They have produce as a destination. They have affordable produce as a destination category, and then they have everything else under the sun to just kind of draw you in. At once you've gotten your watermelon at 49 cents a pound, you know, it's like, okay, fine, I will pay $8 for this pack of duck bacon and another $6 for a pint of Ben and Jerry's and $20 for wine and whatever. Like, they know what they're doing.
Yeah.
But they started off really, really small. And so that was always my thing, is that like, start small and grow.
And do you eventually see it as a conglomerate, as a chain, as store after store after store?
You know, I don't know. I know that the need is there.
Yeah.
In more than just Austin. I know that. But like, grocery is, it can be a very lucrative business, as I'm talking about with, like, you know, your Tony's, your Pete's, whatever. But it's a hard ass business. It's hard. The margins are razor thin. You've got to do volume. You have to have capital. I've seen stores open and close in less than a year. It's a hard business if you can't make it work pretty quickly. So that's why I started small, because I'm like, there's just less to make work. So my whole thing was get to sustainability and then focus on scalability. Because if I can make it sustainable, I can figure out why it's sustainable and then what's repeatable and then scale from there. So I know a lot of startups, their first thing is get to scale fast. Scale, scale, scale. That's, to me, that doesn't make any sense. I mean, you have businesses that are huge in scale that still have yet to turn a profit. Square, Uber. It took Amazon how many decades to be profitable? But when you're run by white men, people just think, oh, you're big, you know what you're doing, so we'll throw billions of dollars at you.
Yeah. Well, and
I don't have that luxury.
Yeah.
Like, to go 10 years without ever turning a profit and people like buying us on the stock market for God knows how much. Tesla isn't profitable. Like, I can name so many freaking companies that are not profitable that still get not millions, but billions in investment.
Yeah.
I don't have that luxury. Yeah. So I've got to figure out the path to profitability first before I think about scalability. Would it be nice to have a conglomerate and a chain? Yeah, like when you're by yourself in your bedroom, you're like, wow, this could really be something. But like in the day-to-day, it's like, no, get efficient, get lean, get the volume, do it at the least cost possible, and just get to sustainability, get to profitability. That's my thought process.
That makes sense. Why Austin for you as a community?
It's completely accidental. I was going through a mystery shopping phase, and the mystery shopping assignment that I chose was on Chicago Avenue, and it said like 5200 Chicago Avenue. This is back in 2016 when I didn't know Chicago neighborhoods like that. All I knew was that when I was looking for my condo, my friends had said, don't go west of Western. They're like, you don't belong west of Western. I was like, well, what's wrong with west of Western? And at the time, Humboldt was just really starting to gentrify. And so people in Humboldt were like, no, it's actually fine. Just don't go past like Kedzie. Don't go past the park.
Right.
So I was like, oh, all right. So I don't know Chicago geography, right? So I knew that in my head. So when the address was like 5200 West Chicago Avenue, I was like, that's definitely past Kedzie. But when I'm going to O'Hare, the neighborhoods near O'Hare are like really nice. And those are like 5000 West and beyond. So I'm thinking that like, okay, it gets quote unquote and then it turns back once you get far enough west and then you're near the airport. That's what I assumed.
Yeah.
I didn't understand the whole north-south thing too. So I hop on the 66 bus to run this errand, and just as I thought, you know, you pass Western, then you pass California, you pass the park, the neighborhood changes on the Chicago Avenue bus. You visibly see it change. You see it. And I'm like, okay, eventually where I'm going, it's going to change back. My stop was Chicago and Laramie, and I'm getting off at Chicago and Laramie, and I'm like, the neighborhood did not change back.
Right.
like, okay. And I'm seeing like, and this is before a lot of the investment that's happened even in the last year or two, boarded up buildings, liquor stores. And it's at that very moment that I'm like, oh crap, I need cash. And I'm like, okay, let me go find the bank because I'm not going to pay a corner store ATM fee. I'm too cheap for that.
Yeah.
Well, crap, I can't find a bank in walking distance. All right, let me go to the drugstore. Let me go to CVS or Walgreens, buy a pack of candy, get cash back. Oh, crap. There's not a CVS or Walgreens it's over a mile away. I can't walk to that. All right, let me go to the grocery store. I hate waiting in line behind somebody with a massive cart full of stuff, but I'll do it. It's cool. Oh, crap. There's no grocery store around here. And then I'm thinking, well, where the hell am I?
Right.
Where am I that these things that are basic, that the first things that come to my mind, they don't exist? Like, where is it?
Yeah.
And it takes me a while to, like, try to, like, find, like, the geographic clues. I realize I'm in Austin. And I'm like, I've heard of Austin. I've never heard anything good about Austin at that point in time. Now I love Austin. And I'm like, it's one of the best neighborhoods in Chicago, beautiful housing stock, parks, well accessed by public transportation. But I didn't know this at the time. All you hear is like what you hear on the news, and everything you hear on the news is negative. So I'm like, oh crap, let me go run this errand and get out of here as quickly as possible. And it just stuck with me. It stuck with me, the disparity, the difference between what I'm used to having lived in the South Loop, Lakeview, Westtown, and then what communities of people who look just like me are living in. They don't have that same access to those resources. I'm just like, that's just not right. Something's wrong with this. Well, where do people shop? Where do people eat? Where do they do the basic things that I'm used to, that I expect? And sometimes you just have those moments in life that just, they seem innocuous, but they stay with you. And that was one that stayed with me. So when I put two and two together that like hey, well, actually, the inspiration for 40 Acres is actually Stanley's. Do you remember Stanley's?
RIP.
Rest in peace.
Yeah.
Yes. So shout out to Stanley's, best produce market in the city.
For real.
Loved it. Loved it, loved it, loved it. I think one day I was there buying strawberries for $1. And I was like, how am I in Lincoln Park buying strawberries for $1? But just a few weeks ago, I was over in Austin and I couldn't find a grocery store to save my life. Somebody should put a Stanley's on the west side. Somebody should do that. Somebody should do that.
Love it.
And so finally I was like, well, why can't I do it? And so that's kind of
That's the magic. Wow.
Yeah, that's just kind of, so it's like that experience of being in Austin for the first time, plus just like putting it together with like grocery shopping in near where I live. And I'm like, I feel like these two could be make like a beautiful marriage. Like they should go together. Like
that's the Reese's peanut butter chocolate moment. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
Yeah. No.
Exactly.
This is you know probably a layup for you, but you know why is it so important for communities to have access to fresh produce?
The layup.
Yeah.
Like, I know. You want people to live. Like,
right.
When people like to talk about the violence in Chicago, you know, a lot of people use it as like a political firebomb or like political hot potato. Like, oh, but what about all the murders? What about all the violence? But you don't talk about the fact that far more people die of stroke, heart disease, diabetes. Like, literally, people are dying. And, like, trust me, dying of diabetes is not a pretty death. It is not, like, heart attacks aren't pretty. Heart failure is not pretty. Like, you see it with COVID-19 and how, like, basically not having access to fresh, affordable food. Like, listen, we all love convenience. I love convenience. This is not a black thing. This is not a willpower thing. This is just a human thing. When what's convenient for you is what can kill you over time, basically your neighborhood becomes a box of kindling and you throw a match called COVID-19 on it and oh my God, how come there's these disparities? Well, duh. So it's extremely important, like just from like a health perspective, from a giving people the option to have healthy food where they live. Like, if it's inconvenient for me to get something, I'm going to get it less. It doesn't mean I'm going to do it not at all, but I'm definitely going to do it less. It's so, like, and even the convenient food options aren't healthy. Like, I've never seen a freshie on the west side.
Yeah,
and I love freshie. Like they're that walkable. Is that how you pronounce it? Oh my goodness! Like I've never even seen a Chipotle. Like you can do Chipotle pretty healthy. Like cancel the wrap, get brown rice, some beans, the chicken, throw the veggies on there. Some guac sounds really good right now. That actually sounds like a really good dish. I should probably find a Chipotle. Like I've never seen a Chipotle or Qdoba on the west side.
Right.
Like, you don't even see, like, I get Popeyes, and that chicken sandwich slaps, but it'll slap you in your ass if you have too many of them.
For real, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, like, that's all I see. I see JJ's, like, they really do some things with fried chicken or fried fish, like, but it's not the fact that those businesses exist, it's the fact that there's no balance to them. There's no counterpoint to them.
No, this is real.
There's no alternative. And so in order to get that alternative, I have to get in my car and go further.
Yeah. Yeah. Liz, how can people shop, support, get involved with 40 Acres? Or are you at the max? You're like, don't even fucking contact us.
No, like we will take more business. Like with this new investment, like the whole purpose, I will talk to you later, Mr. Hatch. The whole purpose of the funding is so that we can do more. So you can go on our website, 40acresfreshmarket.com. That's the word 40, F-O-R-T-Y, 40acresfreshmarket.com. And you can order delivery online. We deliver within the city of Chicago. And we actually mean the city of Chicago, like not right next to it, but the city of Chicago and the western suburbs along I-290 up to Westchester. So if you're in like Oak Park, Berwyn, Maywood, get on this.
Yo, let's go.
Yes. In Maywood.
Yes.
So like Maywood, Bellwood, Broadview, like we service those suburbs. I am sorry to the far north suburbs. I am sorry to the further west suburbs and the south suburbs. We don't have the capacity to do that right now. And yeah, if you're in the city of Chicago, order a box. People are really impressed with the quality, with the selection, with just the level of service that we provide. And what we also let people do is, you know, while you're buying a box for yourself, buy a box for a family in need. We work with local organizations like Buy the Hand Club for Kids, Catholic Charities, River City Community Church. We're about to start working with a couple other like churches and pantries to get people these donated boxes, and those are all our customers. Our customers do those donations, and we just make the boxes and give them to organizations that get them to families that have been hard hit by COVID, whether it's job loss, whether it's they're immune compromised, whether it's both. We get these boxes out to people as fast as we can. So we also work with Chefs on the Go-Go, who's been doing meals for frontline workers, fresh meals for frontline workers. So those donations go to that as well. And so I think we made it really easy for people, one, to get food access to like where they live, but also if they feel like, hey, I want to feel like I'm doing something during this time, like buying a family some groceries is something just like really basic you can do. And we facilitate that.
Oh, that's amazing. And you guys, people can go on the website at 40 Acres Fresh Market. You also have an IG page.
Yep, we have. So we're at 40 Acres Fresh Market on Instagram and Facebook. Same spelling. We post stories all the time. We post all the time. If you go on our website, you can join our mailing list where we give you updates on what we're doing, when the pop-up markets resume, where we're popping up, nutrition tips, as well as just kind of talking about like the economic justice, food justice, and what it really means to invest in and develop a community. That's really what we're looking to do. And we walk what we're talking. Like we hire through neighborhood based employment programs. So, we work with North Lawndale Employment Network, Westside Health Authority's Reentry Program. So, yeah, like, this isn't just, like, yeah, we're a small business, yeah, I'm the owner, but, like, I'm trying to make sure that, like, literally and figuratively that, like, whole communities can eat.
That's right. That's right. Well, Liz, thank you for the work. Thank you for talking to me and Oprah in the same time period. I appreciate that.
No, I've got a question for you.
Oh.
How did you find out about us?
One of the homies and a teaching artist, Dominique James, who we work with at the organization that I'm the creative director of, Young Chicago Authors, which is a youth literary arts org, put me on. I think that she got a box from y'all, and then
she did.
Yeah. Yeah.
I remember that name? Yeah.
Yeah. So she got a box from y'all, and I was just like, "Who are these folks? Oh shit, they're doing powerful work. I want to know more." And so, yeah. That's
well,
how. That's
thank
how
you that. For the thank you for the interview.
We
always like, you know, talking about what we do, and I say we a lot because like it's not just me. I could not do this without incredible community partners, when I first started, volunteers like, shout out Laura Burgos and Ari Bradley for being there day one, Dan Rogers, friends from school who just like, I like what you're doing, I'm going to help you out. And then once we started hiring staff, like just people have been in the trenches with me for like a really long time. Our general manager like doesn't get a day off. So like she's working this every day. Our warehouse supervisor, Tracy, our staff in the warehouse, our drivers, like this is not a one woman band or a one woman show. So they let me be the face, but like they do the work in the background so I can even have time to talk to you. So I have to like
just yes, give all of course. Shout out to them. How many people do you have on staff now?
So three full time, including myself. Another three part time W-2s, and then I think another two or three 1099 part time workers too.
Great. Great. Well, yeah, continue and good luck. And I'm going to check out the website after we get off the phone. So,
yeah, get your box.
I know.
Wait, but only if you live in the delivery area. I don't want to just send you the sorry you're out of the delivery area.
I live in Uptown. Is that? That's all right.
Yeah, you're good. You're city of Chicago. You're good. We got you.
Let's go. Okay, cool. All right. Well, I look forward to checking it out. And thank you so much for being in the corner store.
Of course. Thanks for inviting me.
Shout out our super producer, DJ Cashera. Big up boss man, Todd Manley. Thank you to our official corner store photog, Mercedes Zapata. Salutes to the snack door, Max. Also, please, y'all, follow our Instagram. It's corner_pod on IG, on Twitter. Tell us who you want to see in the corner store. And also, please consider dropping a couple of dollars into our Patreon account. It's patreon.com/cornerstore_pod.
The corner store is brought to you by Stolen Spirits.